Radio.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome everybody to Cannabis Q&A. We've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine on Skype. How are you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day. How are you?
Oh, it's amazing. We're in the high 70s or lower 80s in an October day in Portland. It must be the legalization. That's the only thing I can blame it on.
It makes everything better.
I guess so. That's really nice. Inviting everyone out there to get into our chat room at 420radio.org. If you got some questions for Dr. Mitch, I'll be looking in on the chat room for that. Also, our phone lines are open toll free at 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. Before we get into the latest studies and stories of the day, we always let Dr. Mitch bring up whatever he might have on the agenda. So what's new, Dr. Mitch?
Well, this stuff you sent me, Russ, is superb. I don't know how you'd feel about talking about that, the Vic study on the gateway.
Yeah, let's go to that right away. University of Victoria, British Columbia, talking about how marijuana is not a gateway drug, something we've known for a while. But what does this study tell us? What does this add?
It's funny because the coverage makes it all sound like a gateway drug, but really these data support marijuana as sort of an exit drug. And many of you know Philippe Lucas, who's just a stellar guy, and he and I have actually collaborated on data like this before, but he's got a new data set essentially showing that folks who are involved in the medical cannabis system up there in Canada are much more likely to report that they've got off a hard drug, especially if they're young and using medical cannabis, rather than cannabis leading to a hard drug. And it's funny because this wasn't really designed to test the gateway, but it sort of shows the backhanded way out, if you will, that cannabis may really be a nice path to getting off of, say, problem opiate use or chronic binge drinking.
You know, I somehow got caught up in a discussion online where Dr. Mark Kleiman was involved with it, and he actually conceded to that there might not, he hadn't seen anything really yet toward the substitution effect with alcohol in cannabis, but said there certainly seems to be one with opioids in cannabis. Does this back that up?
In fact, it does, and it's a huge sample. He's got over 400 people, and you don't see studies of medical users that are usually this numerous, and so I feel like the statistical power is there, and that we can really, you know, take some confidence in these results. The alcohol substitution at the recreational level, some studies say yes, some studies say no, and I understand Mark's point, but I feel like his tendency to lean towards federal regulation being the answer to every problem on earth may not be the way to interpret data like this.
And even with this data, there is some controversy among rehab professionals, addiction scientists, about this idea of, you know, substituting marijuana for a harder drug. Some of them, especially the AA types, think, you know, you're just trading one addiction for another, which I'd say at least this one doesn't kill you. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it's funny because I've never been a fan of the idea that, you know, you have to be drug free for your entire life, as I suck down my caffeinated soda here. So it may be my own bias. But the clincher here is we're talking about a drug that doesn't alter your liver function or, you know, make you die the way the opiates and alcohol can. So if this is a step towards becoming completely drug-free, that's great. And you'll certainly live long enough to consider abstinence if you make this substitution.
All right. Let's take a look at some other research. This one coming from the University of Texas at Dallas. The study release says marijuana brain study offers new substance by including nicotine use. Not a new substance, but there's new information because now they're including nicotine use. Hasn't this always been a confounder in a lot of marijuana studies?
Well, and what's funny is it also shows up in like the neuropsych of cannabis things and things like that. So this is really, I'm loved that they're bringing this issue to the forefront. But what they found, I'm wondering if it's really going to replicate, and they're, you know, emphasizing these wild links between hippocampus size and memory functioning, but only in certain groups and not in others. And with a sample this small, I think it may not be something we should put a whole lot of stock into, but I love that they're actually attending to tobacco use on this. And in fact, the very first vaporizer paper I ever published, you know, wanted to emphasize, look, if you're smoking cigarettes, vaporizer ain't enough to help. You gotta put down the tobacco, man. And it's sort of the same situation here where tobacco works on a very different neurotransmitter system, and nicotine is a pretty hard agonist, whereas in the cannabinoid system, THC is really just kind of a partial agonist. So these links aren't going to work exactly the same way.
All right. And then there was another...
1.5% Sorry.
Samuel Jackson breaking into our show here.
Well, whenever I have those newspaper ads open, for some reason, he just seems to show up.
What's in your wallet, Dr. Mitch?
exactly.
Let's see. There's a story out of the LA Times here, and I read this study in some other places. Kids' feelings about marijuana in sixth grade may predict future risk of drunk driving. And the thing that stood out to me on this was, oh my God, now that kids know the truth about cannabis, they don't think it's as bad. Well, yeah, it's not going to turn their brain into a fried egg and be like an atom bomb on Bikini Island. Maybe they are predicting a little less risk from it. But is there anything to this?
Well, the fact that they're linking an attitude about marijuana to subsequent drug driving, what theory would suggest that those two things ought to go together? I mean, it's pretty much a fishing expedition here. And if you read down, it says 12-year-olds who felt most confident that they could resist marijuana use wound up being 89% more likely to mix alcohol and drugs with cars. I'm just like, why don't you guys look at every single variable you have in the data set and just make it into a giant story? If decreased perceptions of risk about marijuana led to marijuana problems, I would be really impressed. But the rest of this is just kind of a strange collection of correlations and reports. And I like that sixth graders actually have some kind of valid information about cannabis, and I hope it would lead to intelligent use down the line, not some crazy correlation with unsafe driving that has no real theoretical link.
Okay, well then I'm not going to worry about this one too much. Let's go on to the next one. This one came out of a local paper, the Bend Bulletin, and it's just one of many that are reporting on scares coming from Colorado and Washington. This one says, study links car accidents to marijuana legalization.
So, in fact, when you read the article, you see there are three data sets, and one of them has a slight increase in estimates of car accidents in marijuana legalization areas. But in truth, what they're doing a lot of is saying, oh, look, now the folks who are involved in accidents are more likely to test positive for cannabis. But they're using these urine screens where, you know, what a surprise. You have more people in legalization states are using marijuana and may have metabolites in their urine, but that doesn't mean it had anything to do with the accident, as we've emphasized time and again.
And, you know, I got to thinking about this in another way, too, is that when we know that marijuana is going to show up active up to 5 days in a chronic user, inactive up to 30 days in a chronic user, and less so in less chronic users, when we're talking about someone who's a once a month cannabis user versus someone who's a once a week cannabis user, there doesn't seem to be much differentiation in the statistic. They'd both be considered monthly cannabis users. But I would posit that as legalization increases access, the guy who was doing once a month might now be doing once a week, and therefore more likely to be showing up as marijuana positive on some of these tests. So that there's not more people smoking pot, but the people who are smoking pot get the chance to do it more often.
And what's curious is it really, when you look closely, has nothing to do with their performance at the time. So if we had a roadside sobriety test on all these folks, I would be much more impressed. But the fact that in legalization areas, more people are showing up testing positive for having smoked marijuana sometime recently is just a sign of the times, not anything to do with actual accidents. And then we've got new data out suggesting that, you know, folks are actually markedly better at compensating for cannabis-related effects when they do drive. I just think driving high is a total buzzkill, so I'm not going to be doing this. But at least the notion that this is causing some kind of increase in accidents, the data just don't really support that.
Yeah, I'm sure if we took a cross-section of people in recent crashes, we'd find a significant increase in how many of them were married gay people.
There you go.
It doesn't mean that gay marriage is causing freeway accidents, folks. All right, we got one more here before we go. But before we go, let me remind everyone that if you want to get a question taken care of privately, you can always email Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com. You can also listen to his podcast on cannabisradio.com, Burning Issues, on which I will be a guest soon, I understand. But
indeed,
let's get to this last one, which says, oh my, medical marijuana appears safe and effective in treating chronic pain. Who knew?
Yeah, I know this is quite the startling finding.
What?
But this is actually the largest sample ever. Dr. Ware up in Canada has data on literally a couple of hundred people now. And, I mean, they do the hemming and hawing about, well, people who are experienced users and who really take care and blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line is cannabis is great for chronic pain, especially if you're smart enough to know how to monitor your dosage and to not do silly things like get really stoned and drive. So there have been known increases in negative consequences, and there have been delightful reports on relief from pain. And I'm thinking this is really the wave of the future, that we're all going to look forward to an old age that's relatively pain-free thanks to the plant.
All right. Well, before you go, Dr. Mitch, since you mentioned Canada, I wanted to get your take on this quote recently from Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper.
Well, you know, yeah, as I said before, there's just overwhelming and growing scientific and medical evidence about the bad long-term effects of marijuana. We've spent a couple of generations trying to reduce the usage of tobacco in Canada with a lot of success. Tobacco is a product that does a lot of damage. Marijuana is infinitely worse, and it's something we do not want to encourage.
Infinitely worse, Dr. Mitch. Now, I may only have a high school education, but infinitely worse is impossible, isn't it?
Indeed. Not only that, I think there's really one domain where cannabis does have a bigger impact than tobacco, and that's on hunger. So nicotine is bound to decrease your appetite. Cannabis is bound to increase it. But otherwise, as far as respiratory risks and other things that are really relevant, cannabis doesn't hold a candle to the necrotic effects of nicotine, and I'm afraid the Prime Minister needs to take a closer look at those data.
Yeah, Prime Minister Stephen Harper in a electoral battle right now for federal control in Canada with the Liberal leader Justin Trudeau, who has been known to smoke a bowl or two with Mark Emery. So marijuana is becoming a big issue in that federal campaign. It's going to be a big issue in the federal campaign in 2016 here in the United States of America as well. Again, folks, check out Dr. Mitch on his podcast, Burning Issues, on CannabisRadio.com, and join us every Monday at 3:30 for this segment on Cannabis Q&A. Dr. Mitch, thanks for your expertise, and we'll talk to you next week.
Man.
All right, stay tuned, folks. When we come back, we've got another guest on the show, another doctor, two doctors for the price of one. Dr. Sue Sisley, MD, the FDA-approved researcher on PTSD, veterans, and medical marijuana, is back to talk about why the Ohio Amendment will provide the greatest scientific advancement in American cannabis research we have ever seen. Stay tuned.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at Radical Russ.